Today's shiur is Masechet Megillah Daf Yud Ches. We will begin on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, the top of Amud at the Mishnah. Our Mishnahs, the Mishnahs in this parak, have been discussing different situation of combinations. So says the Mishnah, all of a Kalei Kerem. If you have all, we know the Torah Kedosha says that during the first 3 years, nothing may be eaten from a tree that grows new fruit. Kalei Kerem is when we have mixtures of different trees or with a vineyard also may not be eaten. Says the Mishnah, all of a Kalei Kerem is start from Zemzah. All on Kalei Kerem do combine with each other for a shear of a kezias. So the obvious question that the Mefarshim ask as we learn this Mishnah is that we just learned in our previous shear that when you have two different Isurim, even if they have the same shear, they don't combine. Yet our Mishnah is speaking about Orl and Kali Karim, which are clearly two different Isurim, and yet teaches us that they do combine. So I saw a number of Terutzim in the Mefarshim to this question. One Terutz I saw in the Mefarshim is that actually Orl and Kali Karim, we find the Torah do compare, because the Alok that Kali Karim must be burnt, that all must be burnt. We learn from a Hekish to Kalei Kerem. So the Tiferes Yisrael says, we see that the Torah does connect the Isurim of Arl and Kalei Kerem, and therefore, even though they're two distinct Isurim, they do combine. Another Teretz that I saw is that it is the opinion of Rameya that whenever someone eats something that's also to be eaten, Macholos Asuris, he's over the lav loisoichel kol ta'eva, which is a general lav that speaks to all prohibited food matter. If that's the case, they are collected. They are connected with the lav of loisoichel kol ta'eva. And the Farshim explain, even though we learn, particularly in Masech de Makis, that the Gemara says that ain loikin a lav shebeklolos, there's no malchus for lav shebeklolos, and loisoichel kol ta'eva is certainly an example of a lav shebeklolos. Explain the Mefarshim, that when is a lav considered a lav shebeklolos? If the only source for that iser is in the lav shebeklolos. But if we have a situation where the lav is mentioned separately, Orl and Kali Kerem being great examples, where the Torah speaks about Orla and the Torah speaks about Kali Kerem, then Lo Yisoichel Kol Ta'eva will not be considered a lav shebeklolos, and there's Malchus. And that's what the Mishnah means when it says all of a Kalei Kerem Mitzdar for this general lav of Loisoichel Kol Ta'eva. A third pshat that I saw is that the Mishnah is not speaking about Tziruf in the classical sense that we understand it, where we have, let's say, a Chatzi Kezayis of Orl and a Chatzi Kezayis of Kalei Kerem combining. But what the Mishnah is speaking to is a different situation. We know that unlike in other areas of Halacha, the sheer bittul, the shear for nullification of Orl is 200 to 1, and the shear of nullification for Kalei Kerem is 200 to 1. So let's say you have some Orl that fell into a mixture, but it's bottle, and you have some Kalei Kerem that fell into that mixture, and it too is bottle by itself. But if you were to combine the Orl and the Kalei Kerem, then they're not bottle. The Mishnah says, as far as that specific halacha, that that's where they are mitzdarif. Furthermore, the Mefarshim discuss, if somebody eats a combination of Orl and Kalei Kerem, not with the teretz that we said, that the Isra of our Mishnah is the Isra of Loisoichel Kol Ta'eva, what is the Hasra that he's given? Because certainly if we say that the Isra of our Mishnah is Loisoichel Kol Ta'eva, then that should be the Hasra. So the Mefarshim say, and I think we mentioned this in our previous year as well, we look at what is the roiv of this mixture. If the roiv is Kalei Kerem, then we would warn him for Kalei Kerem. If the roiv is Arla, we would warn him for Arla. There's a very interesting tshuva in the Sefer Binyan Tzion from the Aruch Lener. He says he met Rav Asher, who was the son of the Shagas Aryeh, who said that he was looking through his father's ksavim after the Shagas Aryeh was nifter, and he found on those ksavim that the Shagas Aryeh says that the Isser of Kalei Kerem is not a sheer Kazayas. Because he says that the Shagz Aryeh says that the only time an Isser has a sheer Kazayas is when the Torah uses the word Achila. And since by Kalei Kerem, the Torah doesn't use the word Achila, so the sheer Kalei Kerem is even less than a Kazayas. And he tells Darklin there, but our Mishnah seems to contradict that. Because our Mishnah is saying that the Ola Kalei Kerem, it starts from Zemzeh, but start from Zemzeh means that they need to have a sheer Kazayas, and they're Mitztarif. So he was doesn't know what to say to what his father writes. So the Orchlin there says, Pshat, according to the Shagas Aryeh, in our Mishnah would be as follows. You're right. The Kalei Kerem don't need a Kazayas. Why don't Kalei Kerem need a Kazayas? Like the Shagas Aryeh says, Kalei Kerem also even by less than a Kazayas. But by Orla, everybody would agree that the Shir is Kazayas. So the Mishnah means to say is that Kalei Kerem could supplement the Orla. If you don't have a Kazayas of Orla, but you have Kalei Kerem to supplement it to a Kazayas, that would be the Shir. Rav Shimon's opinion is that Ein Mitztarfim, that Orla and Kalei Kerem are now Mitztarf, and the Gemara immediately begins. It seems that Rav Shimon is teaching us that for whatever reason, Orla and Kalei Kerem don't combine. But ask the Gemara, why would Rav Shimon require Tzirif? For Tanya, isn't it the opinion of Rav Shimon, Kol Shehu L'Malkus, that you don't have to eat a Kazayis? Even if you eat the smallest amount, you'll be Chayiv Malkus. So why do you need Tzirif? Answers the Gemara, Tani, the great gears of our mission is not Rav Shimon Oim Eim Etzdarfin, but rather what Rav Shimon means to say is, Ein Tzrich L'Tzarif, there is no need to do Tzirif, because even without Tzirif, there's a shear even by Kol Shehu Yechayiv. So the Mepharshim discuss what is the basis for Rav Shimon's opinion. One thing that they indicate, that even Rav Shimon, who takes the strict approach, seems to only be speaking by Malkus. Because let's look at the words of the Gemara. Rav Shimon Amir Kol Shehu L'Malkus, that if somebody eats these Macholos Asuris, the Mezid, which is a Chi of Malkus, that's when even by Kol Shehu Yechayiv. By Karmachatis, by Krisis, it could be he'll agree that the Shir is a Kazayas. But as I said, the Mepharshim debate, what is the reason for Rav Shimon's opinion? Some say, as we know, Shiurim are all Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai. And Rav Shimon's opinion is that by Macholos Asuris, even by Kol Shehu Yechayiv Malkus. Another pshat, and it's very much in line with what we just said, is that when somebody does an Aveira B'Mezid, that's what Rav Shimon's speaking to, because Rav Shimon's speaking about Malkus, you only get Malkus if you did the Aveira B'Mezid. When somebody does an Aveira B'Mezid, so by doing this Aveira intentionally, he's showing that this is something that he's doing deliberate, and this is what he wanted to do something wrong. So even though he only ate a Kol Shehu, that doesn't make a difference. It's already considered an Aveira that it should be Chayiv Malkus. And therefore, Rav Shimon says, if you did the Aveira B'Mezid, then you're going to get Malkus, it's even by a Kol Shehu. The Mepharshim go on to say, the Rishonim go on to say, that Rav Shimon, even though he takes this strict opinion and says that even by a Kol Shehu Yechayiv Malkus, that's only when the Isser is be'en. If you're eating the Isser by itself, so there the halacha is that even by a Kol Shehu Yechayiv Malkus. But let's say the Isser is part of a Taruvus, there's some Isser mixed into other food, that's obviously not bottle, there Rav Shimon will agree that it has to be a Kazayis. We know that the Torah Kedoshah speaks about garments becoming tamei. Furthermore, the halacha is that when we speak about garments becoming tamei, there are different tumas that a garment can have. There's tumas mess, that it comes in contact with a mess, and there's tumas medris. Tumas medris is a unique tuma where if a zov or a zova sit on something which was intended to be sat on, which was intended to be used for laying on, those materials become tamei to the degree of an avatuma, and not only do they become the tamei to the degree of an avatuma, but there's a halacha that let's say there's 10 mattresses, one on top of the other, And the Zav lays on the top mattress. So usually when we speak about Tumah, we speak about descending degrees of Tumah. All 10 mattresses will have Tumas Medris and be in Ava Tumah, provided that they're meant to be sat or laid on. When we speak about a garment or a mattress or a material, it doesn't have to be a full garment in order for it to be Mekabel Tumah. Even if it's just a piece of material, it's Mekabel Tumah. So says our Mishnah, different materials have different sizes. So when we speak about a beged, the shear of a beged tumah is for tumas mes, the shear is 3 etzbos by 3 etzbos. The shear for tumas medris, tumas moishiv, that we just spoke about, when you just have a plain piece of material made out of wool or linen, is 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim. Vasak, a piece of material made out of sackcloth, its shear is 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. And also, interestingly enough, that the sack doesn't have a difference in halacha between tumas meis and tumas medris. I just said by a regular piece of material, by wool or linen, there's a difference in size between tumas meis and tumas medris. All the other materials, there is no such difference. So beged for tumas medris is 3 tefachim, sack is 4 tefachim, or is 5 tefachim, and mappets is like a wood reed, is 6 tefachim. So says our Mishnah, habeged vasak, if you have a piece of material which is a combination of beged material and sack material, or a sack for or, you have a piece of material which is a combination of sack and or, and as we just explained, they have different measurements. Ha'or v'amapitz, kul mitzdarf zemzeh. They all are able to be mitzdarf. What does it mean they're all able to mitzdarf? That if you have, let's use the first example of the Mishnah, ha'beged v'asak. So the shear of the beged we said is 3 tefachim. The shear of the sack we said is 4 tefachim. If you have a piece of material that's made up of beged and sack, and you have it big enough to be 4 tefachim, the largest shear, it will combine to be tameh. Not the lower shear. We follow the higher shear, and it doesn't make a difference what is the majority or the minority of that piece of material. Interesting machloikus rishonim. Our Mishnah speaks about beged v'sak, sack for or v'mappets. So Mishnah keeps speaking about combination of the two closest pieces of material, beged and sack, 3 and 4, sack and or, 4 and 5. But what happens if you have a combination that skips a degree? So let's say you'll have beged and mappets combining. Could beged and mappets combine? Yes, they'll of course require 6 tefachim, but if they have 6 tefachim, will they combine? Or could you only combine with your most immediate, closest piece of type of material? Machloikus Rishonim. And the Machloikus is based, on one hand, the fact that our Mishnah specifically only speaks about cases of combination of the two closest type of materials seems to indicate only when they're closest. On the other hand, there should be no difference as long as you have the right shear. So, explain the Rishonim. Rav Shimon is about to address a fundamental question. Again, based on what we learned in our previous shear. In our previous shear, we learned that when we spoke about Tumah, so the Mishnah said a Nevela and a Sheretz can't combine. And the reason the Mishnah said was, because a Nevela, Tumah is a Kazayas, and a Sheretz, the Shear is Adasha. And we learned that since they have different Shiurim, they can't combine. So it's obvious when we learn our Mishnah, as we just explained, that these various types of material have different sizes. So the question of Shimon's addressing is based on that. How could they combine? Amrav Shimon, ma tam. How could they combine if they have different shiurim? Answers of Shimon, neshiruin latam v'moshev. So Pashup Shat, what Rav Shimon is saying, and the Machloik is how to understand what Rav Shimon is saying. Pashup Shat, what Rav Shimon is saying, is since they all have the common denominator, that they're all tamei tumas moshev, that's enough to give them that they should be able to be considered the same, that they should be able to combine. Obvious question is, if that's enough to allow for tzirif, so a nevel and sheretz also tamei. Yet we just learned yesterday, nevel and sheretz don't combine. So why are they different? So the Achronim, the Karen Oira, explains, When we spoke about sheretz and nevela, we spoke about items that give off tumah, that emit tumah. A sheretz is metama, a nevela is metama. And since the sheretz shear is a kadasha, and the nevela shear is a kezayis, they don't give off shear tumah in the same shear. That's why they don't combine. Our Mishnah, on the other hand, explains the Karanayr is talking about becoming tamei. Becoming tamei, that the piece of material becomes tamei, that the fact that they're all subject to Tumas Moshev, Tumas Medris, is enough to give them a combination of, that they have that common denominator and they all can combine. That's one pshat the Rishonim say. And the other Rishonim say that the words that we're about to learn in the Gemara actually is here to address that question. For although our Mishnah speaks about a piece of material, that you have stam a piece of material, and when you have just a piece of material, the shiurim are as we explain, but there could be a situation that they all have the same shear. So since there's going to be a case that we're about to learn, that they could have all the same shear, that's enough that they have the exact same shear, and they have the exact same tumah, and that's why they combine. And indeed, says the Gemara Tana, we learned in a Braisa, Kitsa Mekulan Shleisha, Vosmem Beged Lemishkov, if you took a piece of material, and there's a machlokes how to understand this, if you combined a piece of material, it wasn't that you had a piece of material, but you combined a piece of material out of these different materials, then the shear is lemishkov. For laying, you need shlosha tefachim. Lemishkov, for sitting, the shear is a tefach. L'chizah kashu. So the first pshat that I've said is that you made a piece of material which is combined, you made a piece of material which is combined out of these different materials, they combine. That's one pshat. Another pshat is that we're not talking about a combination of different materials. Now it's not so popular, but once upon a time, when a person got a hole in his pants or a hole in his garment, they would make a patch. So our Mishnah is speaking about when you have a piece of material that you didn't particularly trim to size. But if you have a piece of material that you trimmed to size, you worked on that piece of material, then all types of material, when it comes to Mishkov, the shear is Shloisha, and when it comes to Achiz, which the Gemara is going to define in a moment, the shear is a Tefach. So since, as we just learned, they have this common denominator, that's why they can be Mitzdarf. As the Gemara, we just learned, the Braisa said, Lachiz, it's a Kolshu, even a Kolshu. As the Gemara, my Lachiz, what does that mean? Answers the Gemara, Amr Shlokish, Amr Yanai, Sheken Oymed LeNavlam. Which means that when they wove the material, they didn't want to have any loose threads sticking out from the weaving machine. So they used to take like a sharp beam and they would run it across that material to make it smooth. But the beam was sharp. They didn't want to cut themselves. So they would put a small piece of material, like we would guess use a glove. They would use a small piece of material, put it, wrap it around their fingers to keep it from getting cut. That's lachiza, wamshat. The people who cut off the figs, so the figs ooze out juice and honey. They don't want to get their hands dirty and sticky, so they put on a small piece of material, and that's when a kosher was enough. Whereas most of the Mishnayis and Gemaras that we've learned till now, Masech the Me'ila, when we speak about Me'ila, was a what kabonis, or what kachim, a subject to Me'ila. Now we get into the how. How, when is somebody over Me'ila? And says the Mishnah, Hanena min ahegdish. If somebody's nena from Hegdish, shove a pruta with a value of a pruta, abish lepogim, even though he has not deteriorated the Hegdish, he's still mal de verbekiva. Machloikis Rishonim, how to understand the din of a pruta by Mila? Does the Mishnah mean to say that if it's less than a pruta, there is no Mila? Or does the Mishnah mean to say that a vada, even if it's less than a pruta, there is an issa, it's hegdish, not allowed to use it for your own personal benefit? The special rules that we've been learning regarding Mila, Karen v'chaymish, Karban Hashem Me'ilas, don't apply by less than a pruta. Really, That question is connected to another question which we've already discussed in our shiurim, is what is the Issa Mila? Is the Issa Mila an Issa Gzela? You stole from Hegdish. If that's the case, so, and we'll discuss this perhaps later also, the Shir Gzela is a Pruta. So the same thing, the Shir Me'ila is a Pruta. Or is it a Din and Bezoyin Hegdish? To take something that's Hegdish and use it for your own personal benefit, is it an independent Aveira? Maybe then it doesn't make a difference, even by less than a Pruta, it's Asr. The Chamar Mecham make the following distinction. Called of a Shesh Begam. Any type of article which is subject to deterioration, the loch is loymala chiefkam. You have not violated Me'ila until you actually deteriorated, depreciated that article. However, v'she'en begam, but if it's a type of article not subject to depreciation, kivin shenanamal, even if you didn't deteriorate it, you will be over Me'ila. And the Mishnah right away gives an example. Ketzad. If someone put a necklace of Hegdish around her neck, tabas biyada, a ring on her finger, shas bekaishazov, or he drank in a gold cup belonging to Hegdish. So these are items that are not typically depreciated. A piece of jewelry could last for a very long time, even though we'll speak about this in tomorrow's shir. The halacha is kivin shenanamal, even though you didn't depreciate it, even the chachamim will agree. However, say the chachamim, lovish bechaluk, if you put on a shirt belonging to Hegdish, kis of a towel, so you put on a coat belonging to Hegdish, beak of a kardim, or you used an axe belonging to Hegdish, the halacha is loy mala chiefkam. You're not mala until you actually depreciated it. Because these are articles subject to deterioration, and there the shir will be a pruta. Furthermore, says the Mishnah, hanenem en achatos kishichaya, if there's a live carbon chatos that you benefited from, it's not considered meal until you depreciated the animal. However, if the animal is dead, so as we're going to learn, the animal, once it's dead, you can't be paid it. So the only thing you could do with it is use it for whatever purpose. There, the halacha is that you'll be over meila as soon as shenana, you nana pruta, you'll be over meila even if you didn't depreciate it. So if we learn the Mishnah, Poshet, it seems that Rabbi Akiva is not tied into this rule of pigima, of deterioration, and the Rabbanan are. Qualifies the Gemara via Machloikis. Tana, we learned in a Braisa. Moider of Kiva l'chachomim, bedovah shiesh bebegam, something which is subject to depreciation, that you're not over me'ila until you actually depreciated by a pruta. Says the Gemara by Mike Mifki, what is their Machloikis? Where do they disagree? Rosh Mitzio means as follows. In those days, they used to wear three shirts. They wore an undershirt, they wore an outer shirt, and then they wore a shirt between the undershirt and the outer shirt. So everybody agrees, this is the way the Rishonim explain, that the undershirt and the outer shirt are subject to deterioration. The undershirt touches your body, the outer shirt is out there, and therefore, they're subject to deterioration, and therefore, everybody will agree that you're not chayiv mi'ila until you deteriorated by shavapruta. The question is regarding the shirt in between. And Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos try to explain this, but it's pretty much the same. The middle shirt, since it's protected by these two other layers, according to Rashi, doesn't begin to deteriorate right away. According to Tosfos, it does perhaps begin to depreciate right away, but it's not a noticeable depreciation. And therefore, both Rashi and Tosfos agree that there, the Gemara is saying, we have Machlokes Rekiva Rabbanan. Rabbanan say it's the same like anything which is subject to depreciation, and you're not moil until you're depreciated by a pruta. Rekiva says because it's so different, it's not subject. Mamala, what is mamala? Mamala is a material, is a garment, made out of a very expensive linen. The linen was an expensive linen, very thin and very delicate. And people would wear it would wear the garment made out of the malmala extremely rarely because it's so sensitive, so delicate. The machlokes of Rav Akiva and Rabbanan is as follows. The Rabbanan say, malmala is certainly an article of material that's subject to depreciation. If anything, it's very subject to deterioration given its delicate nature. Rav Akiva says, since people wear the malmala so infrequently, That means it's not going to deteriorate, and therefore it has a different shear. Therefore, it's not subject to this halacha pgima. Tana Rabbanan begins the brisa nefesh. The Torah, when it speaks about the din of mila nefesh ki simol mal, says the brisa echad ayochad becha nasi vecha mashiach. Hilchas meila apply both to an individual, to a melech, and to a kohen gadol. And we'll learn in Mitzvah Shema tomorrow shir why would we think that a nasi and a mashiach are not subject to hilchas meila. Nefesh, as Mefarsh explained, means any person that has a nefesh, any person that has a neshama, and all Jews obviously have a neshama. Kisima mal, a mal el shinui. Mal means when something was removed from one rishos to another rishos. V'keinu oimer, as the pasuk says, ish ish, kisista ishtoi umala b'mal. V'oimer, and there's another pasuk. The pasuk says, v'yimalu belahei avisayim. The Klai Yisrael began worshipping Avodah Zarah, the Yiznu Achrei Habalim. So Taisa says a very, very important principle here. Taisa says, and the question that Taisa is essentially addressing, is that the Pasuk is quoting two psukim that to teach us the Din Amila. One is the Pasuk by Saita, and one is the Pasuk by Avodah Zarah. Why? Because Taisa says there are really two situations of Mila. One situation is Mila, is when you took something from the Rishus of Hegdish and you brought it to your Rishus, to your own Rishus. You took it out of the Rishus of Hegdish. How is that represented? That's represented with Avodah Zarah. Because what happens by Avodah Zarah? A person leaves HaKadosh Baruch Hu and comes to Avodah Zarah Rechman and Litzlan. Saita, on the other hand, Taisa says, does not represent a situation where she's leaving somewhere. She's married to a husband, and unfortunately, she did a terrible avera. She had an adulterous relationship, but just because you have someone has an adulterous relationship, doesn't mean they're not married anymore. There, the me'il is represented by a hanor. They had benefit from something, and that's called me'ila. So Taisa says there are two situations of me'ila. One is going out from Meshus Hegdish, and one is having benefit from Hegdish. Says the Mishnah, Yochel Pogam V'loinena. Let's say, says the Brisa further. Let's say somebody deteriorated an article belonging to Hegdish without any anor. What would that mean? He took a piece of clothing belonging to Hegdish and he ripped it. So he didn't have any anor, but he depreciated it. Or, Nana V'loi Pogam, just the opposite. He wore a piece of clothing belonging to Hegdish. He was extremely careful, didn't ruin it in any way, but he had anor. Or, over Mechubel Karka, let's say the Hegdish that he had benefit from was Mechubel Karka, Oy, B'shliach Oysi Shlechusai. And the Gemara now introduces an extremely important concept. Throughout Shas, we notice a concept of En Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. If somebody tells someone else to do an Aveira, the halacha is that the Shliach is Chayiv, not the Mishaleach. The exception to the rule is Me'ila. That if Reuven tells Shimon to do Me'ila, and obviously they're both Shagig, because Me'ila, as we've said, always, when we speak about Me'ila as far as the Chiyuvim, that the Torah speaks about Me'ila, it's only B'Shagig. So they both aren't aware that this object is Hegdish, the halacha is B'Shliach Sh'asa Shlichusai, that the Shliach is not Chai for Me'ila, the Mishaleach is Chai Me'ila, Tamalaymer, V'chata. The Torah says the word V'chata regarding Mila. Says the Brisa, Nemachet B'Truma, V'Nemachet B'Mila. The Torah uses that same word both by Truma and by Mila. Machet Ta'am B'Truma. When the Torah says the word Chet B'Truma, it means Pogam V'Nena. Because what does it mean? What does the Torah speak about when it uses the word Chet B'Truma? It speaks about a person eating Truma that belongs to the Kayin. So what happened then? He ate the Truma. So obviously he benefited. He ate the Truma. And furthermore, he was Pogamit. The Truma is no longer here. Umishanana Pogamnana. It's the same individual who does both. He eats the Truma and he's there for the one that's Pogamit. Ubavisha Pogam Boy Nana. That same food is the food that he did both the Hano and the Begima. And these two results happen simultaneously. The definition of truma means that it's produce which is no longer connected to the ground. Ubishliach shasa shlichusai. The basic halacha of shlichus throughout Shas, throughout halacha, that shlichus is effective, we learn from Truma. Because the Torah says atem, and we learn atem, gam atem. From Truma we learn the halacha that somebody could appoint a shliach to take Truma off on his behalf. Af cheta amma be'ila, so we learn exer shavat hilchus me'ila, pogam venena, in order for that to be me'ila, it has to be that you both had hanoah and you depreciated, as we learned on Amud Aleph, however, something which is subject to appreciation. Umisha pogam venena, it has to be the same individual. Ubedavisha pogam venena, ubegosva nasa kamecha, ubetolish menakaka, ubeshliach shasa shechosai. Continues the Braisa, Eina li Eichel v'nena El b'davish ein b'begam Ein li el Eichel v'nena b'davish ein b'begam minayin. How do we know, as I said this moment, that this halacha, that in order for there to be a mi'ila, you have to have begim of v'nena, how do we know that it's only by something that is subject to depreciation? But if it's something which is not subject to depreciation, how do we know that you could still have it avera mila? Furthermore, achilosoi v'achilos chaveroi, which means that someone ate something belonging to Hegda, she ate a half a pruto or half a gazayas of that article, and he gave his friend. And the simplest pshat that the Rishonim say is that he ate, and at the same time that he was eating, he also fed it to his friend. Everyone seems to agree that just because he ate it and he told his friend to eat, that isn't enough to connect. They do want to suggest, some Rishonim, that if one person ate and he told his friend to pick up and be kainah the Hegdish article, that would be Mila. Hanosav Anos Chaveroi, let's say it's not a situation of eating, but it's a situation of benefiting. Hanosav Achilas Chaveroi, which the Rishonim explained would be, let's say it's oil that belongs to Hegdish. So one person smears some of that oil on his body, and the other person eats some of that oil, or vice versa. Achilosoi v'anos chaveroi shemitztarfim zeh mizeh, that the mitztarfim together. Afilu was mamaruba, even if it was the avera mi'ila took place over many years. It's not that he had the hanor immediately, but he had the hanor over many years. Minayin, how do we know that they still have the halacha? That they, all these situations that we described are still the Avera Mila, Timel Malmi Kamakai. So the Malbim asks a question. This Gemara is very difficult to understand. One of the halachas that we've learned throughout Shas is that we can't learn more than one halacha from one pasuk. We just learned in our Gemara, the Braisa, mentioned numerous situations of Me'ila that are all learned from the same word, Temomal. So how can we learn so many different halachas from the word Temomal? So the Malbim says that the Gemara, Chazal, describe Hilchas Me'ila kaharorim hatluyim besara. Why does kaharorim hatluyim besara mean? Like a mountain hanging on a thread. What does it mean it's a mountain hanging on a thread? It means this Gemara. That even though, as we just said, normally you can't learn more than one halacha from a word, one word in the Torah, here we learn so many different halachas from that one word. That's one pshat that the Malbim suggests. And the Mefarshim expound on what the Malbim says, and they say that as long as all the halachas are somewhat similar, by Hilchos Me'ila, we can learn them all from one pasuk. There's a very interesting question. It's a halach l'maisa question posed by the Michas Chinuch. We know that the sheer gzela, sheer gnev is a pruta. Of course, it doesn't mean to say that you're allowed to steal less than a pruta, chas v'shalom. The question that comes up is, what is the halacha if somebody stole less than a pruta? Example that I saw the Paiskim discuss, again, chas v'shalom, not to suggest in any way, this would be mutter. Let's say there's somebody who walks by every day at the grocery store and he takes a candy without paying. The The candy is not worth a pruta. But he does it every day. Does the different acts of geneva combine? As the Mechas Chinuch really explains, the question is based on a fundamental issue. What does the Torah mean when it says the sheer pruta by geneva? Does the Torah mean to say, like usually the Torah means when it speaks about shurim, the sheer geneva, the Torah established as a pruta? If that's the case, says the Mechas Chinuch, so then, just like we know there's a concept of chotzi shir, and chotzi shir could combine, it could be that if somebody stole over many days, it would combine. Or it could be that the sheer geneva is not because that the Torah is establishing a sheer like it typically does. Rather, the way to understand the sheer when we speak about Hilchas Geneva is because less than a pruta worth, a person is meichel. If you take from someone, and again, not to say that it's right, but if you take from someone something worse than a pruta, less than a pruta, the Torah assumes that he'll be meichel. And there's a strong reason to back this explanation, because we know that the sheer geneva by a Yisrael is different than the sheer geneva by an Akum. By an Akum, it's even pox mishav pruta. What's the difference? Because the Torah established, or the Torah understood the psychology, that a Yisrael is meichel when it's less than a pruta, and an Akum is not. And therefore, they don't combine, because every day, when this person takes less than a pruta, the victim is meichel. So the Paiska want to say that since we see that the Torah here by Mi'ila specifically says that Mi'ila over a long time, the last piece of Gemara we just learned, Mi'ila over a long time combines, so it's only by Mi'ila that the din of Zman Meruba. But if it's not Mi'ila, regular Geneva, it doesn't combine over Zman Meruba. It's not a compelling argument, because it really speaks to a different issue that we've discussed, and that is, what is the Issa Mi'ila? If we say that the Issa Me'ila is the Issa Gzela, so it's a very nice raya. If we say that the Issa Me'ila has nothing to do with Gzela, we can't compare Me'ila to a regular Geneva to learn one from the other. And even some Mepharsh Paiskin want to suggest that we will say the Me'ila is the Issa Gzela. It's stealing from Hegdish. It could be stealing from Hegdish has different rules than stealing from a Hegdish. Continues the Gemara. E ma cheta om betruma le tzirv shtei chilas kechad. You have to have it together. Af cheta om mila le tzirv shtei chilas kechad. Menayin ochel hayoim v'ochel amochar v'afilu zman meruba. All of these achilas combined. Tamam laimim tamam mal mikam makam. Continues the Braisa. E ma cheta om betruma pigimosev anosik kechad. You are the person that ate, and you're the person that was nana, and you were the person that depreciated the truma. Minayin lachilos of achilas chaveroi, gakfilu mekayim v'atshol shonim, minayin, that they could all combine, tamalayim tamamah mikom mokim. Ima cheta omen betruma, at shi yoytsim min hakegdish l'choil. What does it mean that you took the truma and you ate it? Af min hakegdish l'choidish, minayin, how do we know that you can have mi'ila when you take something from Kodesh to Kodesh, which means, Lokach, Kine Zivim, Kane Zavas, Kine Yaldas. Next Mesechta we're going to learn that a Zava Yoledes have to bring birds. V'shakel Shikloi, or somebody has to bring the Machzah Shekel. V'hevi Chatos V'Sham, or somebody has to bring Kamechatos Kovan Asham, Mina Hegdish, that he used something belonging to Hegdish to fulfill his obligation of a carbon, or to fulfill his obligation for machzah shekel. How do we know kimin shahoytzi moil, that as soon as he took it and used it for his own obligation, he did me'ila? Kimin shahoytzi moil de Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon says, as soon as you did so, you were moil. So as the Rishonim point out, Rav Shimon saying a very big chiddush. Somebody took an animal that belonged to Hegdish, and he went and used that animal to fulfill his obligation. So as soon as he brings it to the Azara, Rashi explains, he did Me'ila. And all the Mepharshim have a hard time understanding Rav Shimon's opinion. Because Rav Shimon's opinion is that as soon you didn't do anything. If you have an obligation to bring a Karma Chattas, let's use that example. So when do you fulfill your obligation? As Rav Yehuda says, Achi Yizuk Dam, Rabbi Yehuda says, when you bring the carbon, you fulfill the obligation. So Yehuda's opinion is very understandable. If you went and you took this animal that belongs to Hegdish to fulfill your obligation, so when you did the carbon, when you finished procedure of the carbon, you're over Mila. But Rav Shimon says, a Chiddush, that as soon as you bring it to the Azara, you already did Mila, but well, you didn't do anything. You didn't fulfill your obligation, you didn't bring it as a carbon yet. So some Rishonim learned that yes, that's what Rav Shimon is saying. That Rav Shimon is saying that the Mila is as soon as you bring it to the Azara, even though you still have to bring it as a carbon. I saw from Shach, in a Sefer Avi Ezri, he gives a nice explanation. He says, very interesting explanation in understanding Rav Shimon's opinion. He says, when a person's obligated to bring a carbon, he actually has two obligations. One obligation is that he sort of has a financial obligation, that he needs to spend his money to bring a carbon. And then he has a chiv to bring a carbon. So as soon as you bring this carbon to the Azara, says Rav Shach in explaining Rav Shimon, you fulfill the first part of your obligation, to spend money to bring some as a carbon. And therefore, you are over Me'ila as soon as you bring it to the Azara, even though you haven't fulfilled your second obligation. The Shalos Tshuvos Einig Yontif ask, it seems that Rav Shimon and Yehuda both seem to be saying that if you go and you use a Hegdish animal to fulfill your obligation of a carbon, you'll be over Me'ila. But they don't seem to say that the carbon won't be a good carbon. They both seem to be suggesting that the carbon will be a kosher carbon. But why isn't this situation a mitzvah baba aveira? So according to Rav Shimon, it's easier to understand, says the Einig Yontif. Because there's a klal of mitzvah baba aveira only if the mitzvah and the aveira at the exact same time. The aveira here, says the Einig Yontif, is as soon as you bring it to the Azara. The mitzvah is only after you are mak of the carbon. So if the mitzvah and the aveira don't come at the same time, it's not called the mitzvah baba aveira. That's good according to Rav Shimon. Rav Yehuda says that the aveira is only when you did the zrika. So why isn't that considered a mitzvah baba aveira? So he wants to say in that teretz that even Rav Yehuda agrees, and with Rav Shach's explanation, it's very understandable, that something certainly occurs as soon as you bring it to the Azara. That's his explanation. Another explanation that Einig Yontif gives is if the Torah is being mechadish in this words of Timo Mal, and as we keep on saying, there's a lot pushed into these words, Timo Mal, that there is Me'ila on an animal that's Hegdish, so the Torah obviously recognized that it's a mitzvah baba aveira and you're mekayim the mitzvah. Because if you're not mekayim the mitzvah, then there wouldn't be Me'ila because you didn't accomplish anything. And one of the rules that we've been learning in our shir is that in order for there to be Me'ila is that you have to have had some sort of a benefit. If you're not going to have it as a kosher carbon, then you didn't have any benefit. You wouldn't have Me'ila. So the Torah, by saying that there's Me'ila in this case, is saying that this is an exception to the rule of mitzvah baba aveira.